The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org. And New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is all-time friend Dr. Lee Merengoff, Assistant Professor of Political Science and Director of the Marist Institute of Public Opinion, or the well-known Marist Poll. It's been a while, Lee Merengoff, but we love talking to you because you know more about this than anybody we know, and thank you for being with us.
Always my pleasure, Alan. We're getting a little older, though, you know.
Yeah? Well, I'm 80. How old are you?
70. We're 150 together. I don't know if that's a good way to
I don't want to hear it. Okay. Let's talk about it. The latest poll.
Yeah.
NPR, PBS, NewsHour, Marist, National Poll, November 2021. Americans see a serious threat to democracy, trust elections largely on a partisan basis. Tell us more.
Well, I mean, you know, I think this is, you know, more of the same, except it's always getting just a little worse every time we look at the, you know, we turn the page to the next issue. We have, as everyone knows, a former president who decided not to concede an election and then went through a series of court cases about fraud, alleged fraud, and barely got anybody to salute along the way. And then, of course, what happened at the Capitol on January 6th, the reality of which keeps getting worse with every revelation. So what this has done, it's taken the polarization that we've had in America and really kind of, you know, strained all the ties and links that people have. You know, some are saying that the Republican Party has just gotten very radicalized in terms of the rank and file voters because they really have some issues with winning and losing elections and what that means. And if you have a democracy where so many people on the Republican side don't concede that Donald Trump lost that election, then you get all kinds of problems, and I think we're experiencing that right now. And it's very worrisome as a pollster, as a citizen, as a political scientist, and all of those things that you are also. I assume you're equally concerned.
Whoa. I'm not a pollster. No, but...
And that's where we draw the line.
but I do have such respect for you, Lee. So I want to ask you this. Is this the worst thing that you have ever seen in your considerable lifetime and mine that has ever happened to challenge the American democracy?
Wow. You know, I always jokingly used to say about, you know, when were the good old days? Because we always talk about the good old days. I always have a tough time coming up with when that exactly was, when people could feel comfortable, because America has always been a story in the making and certainly an unfinished one at that. This is a huge step backwards. I can't think. I mean, there were other times. I mean, McCarthy period during the 50s where, you know, people were being blacklisted and you know, the government was, you know, really turned upside down in similar fashion to what has contributed to where we are today. But I can't think of a time when the American people were so divided over fundamental principles of democracy. And I can't, you know, as I'm talking, I'm thinking of other times. You know, Watergate tested the system, but ultimately it prevailed, as it may this time too. But the test wasn't as challenging to the legitimacy of the government as I think this is going across the board. I mean, I saw a poll just recently that said most people think the Supreme Court decisions are not based on law, but are based on politics.
Hey, I'm with them.
So, yeah, well, there's an element certainly of truth to that. But you know, that again, you know, what is the rule of law, and what is it about people's right to vote, and what is it about the outcome of that vote that is being challenged? You know, I can't think of, you know, I guess, during the Great Depression in the 30s, with war looming in Europe, was certainly a testing for FDR. Mm. But again, I think this is beyond that. This goes to the core of the principles of democracy, and I think it goes beyond that.
Now, Lee Marengoff, excellent pollster that you are, I'll ask you a tough one. Donald Trump says he may want to run for president again. Can he win?
Well, you know, for all those who said he couldn't win the first time, I mean, the answer is sure. It depends, as always, who he's running against and the conditions that the country is in that time, at that point. I mean, the country, you know, is widely divided, and the outcome of elections on the presidential level, although Trump lost by more than others have lost by in recent years, despite his decision not to concede. Yeah, so, I mean, he could certainly get the nomination. He has, you know, taken over the Republican Party for all intents and purposes. I'm not sure he's going to run. I think he's in the business right now of fundraising. I think he likes sort of being his self-proclaimed kingmaker, where he's, you know, challenging Republicans who, you know, office holders within the Republican Party who don't support all his statements and positions, to get people to run against them and to primary them and to, you know, have them pay a cost in the primaries. There's governors who are, you know, struggling right now for running for their political lives because they haven't, you know, stepped up to the Trump plate. So you know, there's support there for him. And then there's the flip side of the coin. Where are the Democrats? And, you know, obviously the Democrats, at least for president, will be the incumbent party at that point. And, you know, what does Joe Biden do? Who's in the waiting for the Democratic Party should Biden decide not to run? Although he has said apparently that he intends to run. But, you know, that's, you know, if there's anything you and I have seen in the last 5 years, it's how fast the political system now moves and how today's topics are, you know, done by end of day. And we have a whole new round tomorrow. And so, you know, where we're going to be in our politics in, 2 years or so is anybody's guess. It's a long answer to the question. He may run. He could win. He mobilizes Democrats as well as Republicans. And it's would not necessarily be a pretty event. I mean, and for the media, I'm not sure how you cover, because the media itself is, under attack by him. So it puts the media in a very odd position, covering a presidential campaign where they themselves are the target of one of the candidates' attacks.
You know, along those lines, Lee, I'm so glad we're talking, because I'm going to give you a tough one here. There is a move on by newspapers to get federal money to support them. Right. So in other words, they're editorializing that you should give us money so that we can survive. I'm very troubled by this one. I wonder how you feel.
I'm with you on that. I'm still back to civics. You know, independence is a big deal. And if your budget is dependent upon the political machinations of those in power, that can affect where you go with things in your decision making and et cetera, your editorial policy, whatever. America's in much better shape when we have a respected press that's an independent press, and, you know, a healthy press financially. And I think right now we're suffering in all three areas. But I don't think the answer is the acceptance of federal dollars to help as some kind of bailout during these difficult times for lots of industries. I mean, this pandemic has taken what was already in process and multiplied it by many fold. Things have moved tremendously in ways that I don't even think we've begun to absorb yet.
So when you poll, could you get any sense of where people go to get their political information? I mean, public television, public radio, but newspapers are failing, dropping all over the place. What's your sense when you poll? Are people smart enough politically to be able to answer your questions?
Yes, that's not the problem. I think the problem is that people, in their selection of what they learn and what they hear, and this is not a novel idea with me, but basically people are, you know, they're finding ways to reinforce their viewpoints, not necessarily to find information. And I think we saw that during COVID and you know, again, in a huge multiplier where, you know, there was just this notion to politicize, you know, the wearing of masks and then to take a vaccine or not. And that became, you know, just, you know, something which created just an enormous amount of misinformation and ultimately an extension and the of the length of the COVID and also its seriousness when we're talking about 750,000 Americans having died from this. I mean, that's just a number that's beyond what anybody could have. I mean, I remember way back not so long ago, we were talking 60,000 was, and people were doubting that. This is 12 times what our casualties were in Vietnam. It's just, it's an enormous terror that has been leashed. And the notion that, you know, you could have, you know, to question the public health community as part of, again, this notion that, you know, we don't trust, we have no confidence in anything that has an expertise associated with it. You know, it's a question of, you know, who you're going to trust. It's the old Marx Brothers line, you're going to trust, you know, your own eyes or what they say. And, you know, we tend to, you know, be influenced by what other people are saying in a reinforcing way. So it's, politics isn't about persuading people as much anymore. It's about mobilizing your base. And I think that's why Donald Trump has both been a recipient and a contributor to that. And it's changed during that period.
Joe Biden, President Biden, has an approval rating. He's dropped even further since your last poll found 44% of the Americans approve of the job he's doing. His president, 49% disapprove. And that's gone down even further. Can he turn these numbers around?
Well, he needs, you know, he's in a very unpleasant position. He has the slimmest of majorities. In the Senate, obviously, 50-50. In the House, I think it's a net of 5 seats. So, I mean, anything he does, he's really threading the needle, walking the tightrope, whatever you want to call it. And I think initially there was somewhat of a honeymoon period, and that's to be expected. It wasn't enormous because of the way things are so divided. And then he sort of took a slow, steady drop, and now he's sort of found himself in the low to, at best, mid-40s. Better than Donald Trump was, but that doesn't mean he's in good shape for re-election or for the midterm elections coming up next fall. You know, I think he needs some wins because he needs to start convincing people that he is fulfilling his campaign promises and that he is being successful in some way. And that's tough. I mean, he's, you know, with a filibuster and all those things, it makes it very hard.
But here, Lee, is my question.
Yeah.
He has just had some political successes. He's had one bill pass, and looks like some other things are going through. And I'm wondering whether there's a time lag between when you poll and what we're seeing.
There can be very much. There's two theories going around right now. One is that he's being evaluated independently of any accomplishments that's occurring. So that basically, yes, he's got the infrastructure. The Build Back Better seems to be, crawling its way through the Congress. So that interpretation is that there's a separation that he can be getting things enacted that are very popular, but not necessarily because it's taken so long in our high premium society that we live in. It seems like it's taken forever, which it hasn't really. But that theory is one, and the other is, of course, that there is this delay, and that when people start to evaluate some of the first year, the second year, that he will start showing some improvement. The group that's softened has been largely the independents. I mean, he's never had the Republicans, and he continues to have most of the Democrats. But the group that has weakened have been the independents, and that's the group that ultimately he needs to get back in his corner. But again, I think that there's certain temptation to over predict what's going on. So, I mean, I've already seen dozens of cases why the Democrats are going to lose the majority in Congress. And, you know, we don't even know what next September and October are going to look like at all. We don't know what the inflation is going to look like. We don't know what the unemployment situation is going to look like. We don't know what COVID is going to look like. And we don't know what other issues might come to the fore between now and then. So I think, you know, we have a tendency to kind of get ahead of our skis a little bit in analyzing politics and not letting things play out. And unfortunately for Joe Biden, you know, he doesn't do politically, surprisingly, some of the easiest things in politics, that you say you're going to do something, you do it, and then you say you've done it.
Right.
And he doesn't seem to have that basic three-step going.
Let's go back to polling for a moment.
Okay.
Pollsters have taken a lot of hits.
Yep.
A couple of points here, a couple of points there. So what about the technology? We got cell phones. We got all kinds of issues. Are we going to be able to get over all of that?
Well, that's the multi-billion-dollar question for an industry. There's always, this is an industry that has always faced challenges because we're aiming at a moving target, and the society changes, the technology changes, the regulations directing how we can conduct our business changes as well. I think we have to accept the notion that polls are probably not as precise, certainly as predictors, as we interpret them to be. I think we're a lot better off identifying issues that are on people's minds and getting a sense of what the narrative is of a horse race without worrying about, you know, the difference of a point here or a point there. Although that's what we tend to gravitate towards every election, and we come away speaking about how the polls had serious misses, which they've had in recent years. We don't know if that's just Donald Trump or other factors at work, but certainly the challenges in terms of how you reach people have gotten both easier and harder. Cell phones provide us the opportunity to reach people where they are, whenever they are. So in a mobile society, no pun intended there, but we're able to, you know, reach people when they're not necessarily at home, you know, finishing their dinner. And so that's to an advantage. The disadvantage is a lot of people just aren't particularly eager to talk to people when there's so much telemarketing going on. Mm. And we all get those. I mean, sure. We get the spam, we get the stuff, you know, that we know is something we don't want to deal with. And, you know, that makes it much harder for folks who are just gathering public opinion.
Now, I see that New York Governor Kathy Hochul continues to lead all challenges for governor.
Yep.
Is it too early? And then there's the question of Tish James, who I have tremendous admiration for. And it leads to yet another question. Sorry for elongating this too much. But obviously, being of color in New York City gives Tish James an advantage. Clearly, Kathy Hochul went and appointed a lieutenant governor who is, of course, black. So how can you judge as a pollster how important color is in making decisions?
Well, it's certainly an important factor. And, you know, we can look at the numbers. That's what we, you know, as a good friend of mine who does polling says, you know, you got to believe in your numbers because that's all you got. So we look at the numbers and we can see, not now, but as we get closer to a primary, presumably, where the black vote goes. There's a lot of factors beyond that, but certainly who the candidates are becomes important. We don't know the field yet. It's getting more occupied. I guess there's three or four now and perhaps even more who may get in. We know that the lion's share of the vote will come from New York City. And we know that Kathy Hochul, as the governor, is from upstate. So she's trying desperately to build bridges to the city. I couldn't help but notice on the this past election day in November when Eric Adams was became a black who became mayor of New York City, mayor-elect at the current time, that Kathy Hochul was there at his victory celebration. I'm sure by some kind of invitation, but that wasn't lost on those who are watching for this very point that you're saying. What does Tish James do in terms of the black vote out of the city? Because that's obviously her base. But it, you know, in a Democratic primary, there's a lot to be said for, you know, that group having an important influence on the politics. But, you know, Kathy Hochul's, I think, made some good moves. And has tried to take the lead as an incumbent by distancing herself from Andrew Cuomo, which I think politically she had to do. You know, I think it's going to be a rough Democratic primary. I mean, we could get Bill de Blasio in this. It looks like he's going to run, and there may be others.
So let's say seven people are in that primary. Let's just say Andrew Cuomo. I think I know Andrew Cuomo fairly well. I've interviewed him many, many, many times. My question to you is, in your pollster mind, is it conceivable if Andrew puts himself back into the pool and runs for governor in a primary, and I think they're scared of it, the establishment is scared of it, could he win?
Well, then that's the same question you asked about Donald Trump, and the answer is yes. He has a much better case, and you may disagree with this, but against a James candidacy than he does against a Hochul candidacy. Because against James, he can say, yeah, you see, when I was being accused of these things, I said it was all politics, and now here she is running for governor. Proves my point. Against Hochul, it's a harder argument for Cuomo, because against Hochul, he's, you know, saying that the person he picked to be his lieutenant governor, in the case something happened to him, which it did, you know, somehow isn't right for the job, and put me back because maybe she wasn't as good as I thought she was going to be. I mean, it's a much cloudier case for him to make. Having said that, I mean, you know, is a lot of money going to be spent on this primary? New York's expensive, but people are raising dollars hand over fist, and Cuomo comes at this with a lot of money in the bank to begin with. I mean, I think he'd love to be governor again. I think it's an uphill fight, but again, you know, from a polling standpoint, from, you know, just someone who watches politics, you know, it does become a question of who's in the field, because different people, the kinds of people we're talking about, these, you know, huge personalities and big political names for New York on the biggest stage in the country, you know, they're going to take some votes, and the question is, who are they taking them from?
Absolutely, right.
Where do the numbers come from, and how does that divide up the deck in a primary where turnout could be, you know, 10% or 15%, even if there is an exciting race?
Yeah, you're exactly right on this. Let me ask you a question. It's sort of insulting, not to you, but has our population gotten stupider? And is it possible that as a result of people knowing less and less and less, that has hurt pollsters?
I don't know what you mean exactly by hurt pollsters. We're going to measure.
I mean, if somebody doesn't know anything, you call them up and you ask them, and they can give you an off the top of their head answer, but they don't know anything. It seems to me that that's got to be bad for you guys.
Well, are you positing this as having been worse than it's been? I mean, I think we've always had a real information gap in our politics, and I think if anything's happened, along the lines you're talking, is that people have been subject to increasing manipulation by a whole variety of methods to reach people with messages that can be very misleading. But I think as pollsters, we're measuring that. I don't think that makes the polling process more difficult. It gets back to your original question about the democracy. And if people are buying the kinds of stuff that's being offered, that can, you know, shake our democracy at its foundation. That's a bigger issue. For pollsters, I mean, I don't think, you know, and I think we've talked about this before, I never think polling is kind of as powerful as everybody makes it out to be. I mean, we all watch it, but, you know, do you wait for the next Marist poll to decide how you're going to vote? No, you don't, because you're already you know, you either have made up your mind or you haven't made up your mind.
Well, some people do. Some people want to get on the bandwagon. And if you say somebody's going to win, they say, oh, good, I'll have some of that.
But there's no evidence that people who are ahead get ahead by more. You see, sometimes the underdog catches up. So, and then also, if you have a Quinnipiac and a Siena, a Monmouth and a Marist, and you have all these polls, you know, and the more the merrier from my vantage point. But, you know, does that mean you're then going to, you know, there's lots of different numbers out there, and you can find one you like. I think it's more like you're rooting for a candidate. So if you like Bill de Blasio to be the next governor of New York, and you see he's only got 5% in the Marist poll, I don't think you jump ship. I think you just say, gee, that's too bad. I mean, if I like de Blasio, I don't know. I don't think we're quite as powerful.
Yeah,
I know the consultants are into that. I mean, everybody, watches for the next poll, but I'm not sure the public is connected to all that as much.
Well, yeah, but on the de Blasio matter, nobody likes him. So what's the...
I picked him intentionally. So, I went through my mind. You see, I used the example.
Poor guy needs a job, you know.
Yeah, well, he wanted to be president.
Well, he wanted to be president, and that apparently was what really fired up the war with Cuomo. You know, so.
No, I know. We do our polling with NPR, and we find that NPR is a very trusted media source.
Ah.
How do you feel about that? And how has that changed? Do you feel that's changed over the last 10 years when the media itself has been, getting pummeled?
Are you asking me that question?
Yeah.
Are you asking me, how do you feel about that? I don't trust them. I don't trust NPR. I trust WAMC, a public radio station, much more than I do NPR, because I think NPR has its own implicit biases. And for whatever it's worth, I'm glad you asked.
Okay, I'm just curious, because you sort of have been a player in this too. You're not just a questioner. You've been to the rodeo a few decades.
Yes, you can say that again. Hey, Lee Marengoff, we love you, and we think that you are a great friend to have, and you have so much good information, and we really trust that your students are enjoying you the way that we do. Our guest has been Dr. Lee Marengoff, Assistant Professor of Political Science and Director of Marist Institute of Public Opinion, or the well-known Marist Poll. Lee Marengoff, we have so much respect for you. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Alan. Keep it going.